My name is Johnny Murray-Hiel. I'm the publisher and editor of the Harmonic Concordance blog. With me today is a magical creature, as someone who I've grown to love over the years, Linda Keen. Linda is the author of several books, but the one I want to speak with her about today is John Lennon in Heaven, and the subtitle, I may add, is Crossing the Borderlines of Being. And we're going to take a trip through those borderlines of being into other realms today. Hopefully, we'll find out some information about John Lennon. We'll also find out a good deal of information about Linda Keen. And we're also going to look at some of the things that Linda learned in her trips to heaven. So without further ado, let me please introduce you to Linda Keen. Say hi, Linda.
Hello, everybody.
So, Linda, let me start this with telling people why I've become so drawn to this and this character of John Lennon, this personage. In 1965, I had the audacity to write a senior thesis paper on John Lennon. The title was John Lennon, Beatle, Poet, and Satirist. He had inspired me to the point that I thought that he was worth writing about as someone who is significant in terms of literature. So I wrote the paper, got it back from my professor. He said, I have to give this paper two grades. The first being a B minus. I can only give you a B plus, I'm sorry. Thank you. Because your spelling is atrocious. So it was, and this is well before anything like spell check. And thank God.
It's 5 o'clock.
When I write something, I got all sorts of red lines under words and stuff. So anyway, the second grade, he said, I have to give you a C on. And I'm giving you that because John Lennon is not an appropriate subject matter for a senior thesis paper.
That's hilarious, isn't it?
So I wonder who got the last laugh on that one.
Yeah, I think we know him.
Right, but some people may still feel that way, but unfortunately for them. That began my connection to John. I began following him religiously. In 67, I got Sergeant Pepper came out. I bought the first pair of wire rim glasses that anybody had seen in Hempstead, Long Island. I was a teacher at a junior high school, and I was out of step with what they wanted. But nevertheless, I was an acolyte. Staying in touch with him and what he did, obviously saddened by his death. The day that he died, the day I heard about it, I sat out in my backyard and said a prayer for him to go in peace and love and know that a lot of people loved him, right? And as I was saying that prayer, I had a big wind come up in my face, right? And it was like I was hearing his wings, so to speak.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that I was attached to him there. And then later, years later, rummaging through the new bookshelf in a local library, I came across John Lennon in Heaven. Of course, I picked it up and read it and became fascinated by it. not only for the story, excuse me, of John Lennon, but also of the story of Linda's own explorations and growth through her contact with John, and what she learned with beyond what John was able to say. So we're going to look at three parts today, and this is the beginning with my little story, and now I'll ask Linda to tell us the story of how she became involved with John Lennon.
Well, I had been teaching metaphysics, intuition, development in the Netherlands. Had a school with my husband, four-year curriculum of healing and self-healing. And I had written a book about intuition that in the Netherlands that had become very successful, much to my amazement. It became, in the metaphysical realm, it had become a best-selling book in the Netherlands at that time. In 1985 is when it came out. And then I was also, at that time, as I taught my students, very much interested in my dreams, because I knew they were letters from God, and, you know, ways of knowing ourselves and what's going on in areas that we otherwise wouldn't know in our dreams. And so my husband and I had traveled to the Switzerland. We were in the Alps. We were staying in a hotel. And I had a dream about a woman who was going to write a book called John Lennon in Heaven. And John was pretty much organizing this whole thing because he wanted to speak to someone about what it was like being outside of the planet in heaven, or what, you know, there's a lot to be said about heaven, but just to be out of the body and to be learning and growing still, that life goes on and there's a whole other, much bigger world out there than just on the planet. And so I had that dream. Soon after that, I had another dream about him when I returned to the Netherlands. That was my home at the time. And in this dream, I saw John in the ground, in the earth, like in a hole in the ground. And I helped him to put on a pair of my, I don't know what you call them now, denim pants, Levi's. I was helping him to put on this pair of pants that belonged to me. And when I woke up from the dream, I was thinking, oh my God, does this mean I'm supposed to help give him a substance in the physical world? Because kind of, you know, they're my pants and I'm helping put them on. There was nothing intimate about it, whatever. It was more like helping to dress a child. And from that time on, then I started to feel his presence, but I was very skeptical because, you know, a deceased beetle is not someone you want to mess around with in terms of speaking out, oh, yeah, I've been talking to John Lennon, you know, because, you know, it's even worse now than it was in the 80s. Now, in those days when there was no, you know, the whole social media thing wasn't as bad, it was more acceptable. And nowadays, let's say, yeah, right, who's crazy? Who's trying to make money off of the Beatles? You know, so all of that. But in those days, thank God, it wasn't as bad as it is now. And so I actually had the nerve, with the encouragement of my husband, to write about John. It took a while to get the, the wherewithal to actually do something with it. Took a while. But once I started, I was pretty shocked at how the information just kind of flooded in. And every time I projected myself into, say, the astral plane, and I started getting all this really cool information. So that's kind of how it all got started.
All right. And the first time that you entered the realms of heaven, let's say. The first person that you met there was not John. It was a character by the name of Basil, who becomes very instrumental in the whole contact.
Yeah, now Basil, dear Basil, is actually he was actually a person that I met in Amsterdam at a huge, enormous gathering. He gave this enormous reading and healing in Amsterdam. And I can't think of the year, probably 78. And I met him. I got pushed up to meet him. He was an amazing psychic and healer. And my students, who just happened to be there at the time, my people I'd worked with, just pushed me up. And he took my hand and he said, "You're doing great work. I'd like to, I'll help you. If just ask for me and I'll be there." That was in the late 70s, and he helped me tremendously with these amazing healings, and I won't go into that, but he became my main guide for my school that I started in the 80s with my husband, and he was someone that I always asked for help from in writing curriculum and in teaching the students. And then, so he, I believe, as far as I know, I already named him Basil, and I don't know what year he actually passed over, he died, but he became the main person helping me, not only to teach and to heal, but also to write the story. So I was very amused when I went to this other place, and there he was waiting for me, giving me a hard time, because I was too insecure to actually own up to my experiences, you know, having John around. So he really, he egged me on and gave me a hard time in a loving way to have the courage and the self-confidence to talk to John.
Then on one of your trips to heaven, all of a sudden, this Liverpoolian,
right.
I don't know.
There he is, yeah.
And right, there he is. Would you tell us a little bit about that first encounter?
Well, I mean, it still is. I mean, it sounds funny, but after all these years, it's still kind of, I guess I'm that kind of person. Difficult to believe that I was actually talking to John Lennon, but there was too many things happened with him that I had to start saying, okay, I'm actually talking to John Lennon. And so when the first time I saw John, I was, of course, nervous and feeling very insecure about it. And
a bit intimidated?
And then he gave me a hard time as well, just like Basil.
A bit intimidated?
Oh, of course. I mean, God, who talks to a deceased beetle? I mean, to me, that was very, almost crass, you know, like, I mean, because, and I've seen afterwards, of course, many people thought, you know, I'm just like trying to cash in on a beetle, but in fact, that still is a problem. You know, I mean, it still makes it hard for me to go out into the world and say, yeah, you know, I talked to John Lennon, but that happened, so I have to live with it. I have to deal with it, and it continued to change my life, obviously. You know?
All right, so a little bit about that first encounter.
He was basically telling me that we knew each other, and we knew Basil together from other lifetimes, and just, you know, suck it up and accept the fact that I was supposed to be writing. I'm a writer, I'm a healer, I'm a teacher, and that I just had to accept the fact that I was supposed to start dealing with it and writing about him. And, you know, I was, of course, skeptical and kind of resisting.
Resisting your own knowledge, your own...
Yeah, I mean, like we all do. We all resist our own knowledge, every one of us.
Right.
Yeah.
So you began a conversation with him that transpired over a number of years.
Yes.
You were first introduced to the idea of a project, which you called it, right? This was going to be your John Lennon project, right?
Right.
You didn't know at the time when you first began that you were going to be writing a book about John.
Well, because of the dream and the insistence of my husband, who was instrumental in making me write, I pretty much in the beginning knew it was a project because I knew I wasn't, you know, I worked at this school that we had, and I took it very seriously, and I think from the very beginning, because I believe the first visit we had, John was saying, well, we're going to do this project together, and you better grow up and deal with it. So I took it as an important endeavor.
Good. So the endeavor led you to discover your connections to him, not only in this lifetime in writing this book, but in other lifetimes also. For instance, there's one scene that I really am captivated by is a scene on the beach where you see a figure in a conducting mode in 17th century garb or 18th century garb. Who did you discover that person was?
Well, I don't want to spoil the story, but I guess I have to, right?
A little bit.
Okay. The people who don't want to know can just like gloss over, close their eyes until they get a few sentences later. I discovered that he had been Mozart. And funny enough, in later years, other people had thought the same thing as synchronistically, but that I had never heard of that. And to be completely honest, my husband had seen it as well.
Prior
even though
to that.
He wasn't writing the book, but he had just seen that as well. So I proceeded to listen to Mozart and get memories coming back.
And one of those memories, you saw yourself.
Well, I'm a violinist in this life, and I was a violinist in that life. I was in his orchestra, so it was pretty emotional. I had quite a breakdown when I remembered the connections and heard the music playing in my ears. And also, I was listening to Mozart as I wrote it, so I was in quite an emotional state when I when I owned up to the fact that I had known him, and it was pretty emotional.
And you knew him in many other lifetimes. He can go back to
Greek times, Egypt, whatever. I can't even remember them all. But
Atlantis was one I remember.
Which one?
Atlantis.
Oh yeah. That's the first one, the earliest one I think that happened. Yeah, in Atlantis. Yeah, where he was my he was my son. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and. Many other lifetimes together, as you just mentioned in Greece, in ancient Greece. I was particularly struck by mention of Delphi and you being healers at Delphi. Delphi rings a special bell for me because over the lintel at the entrance to the oracle site, there is this phrase, man, know thyself.
Right.
And then further on in the inside the oracle, inside the temple, the words, man, know thyself, and thou shalt know the gods.
Right.
So it's really, and that for me, for years and years, since I first heard that back in the 60s, that became a driving force for me to know who I am.
Right.
And to know who I am, it's not And not only to know who you are, but to believe it and to act like it.
Exactly.
You know, we are those creator gods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, according to the Delphic Oracle, anyway, or to the temple. But the point was that for me, it became a central mantra.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find, I'm not surprised at all that there is that Delphic connection, because I feel that I have that.
To interject, Johnny, I'm pretty sure you were there. That comes across really strongly that you were part of that whole thing. So.
Yeah. I believe it also. There are a lot of things that, you know, that ring true for me. And talking about it right now, you said a little earlier, you got chills. Well, I'm just getting them now, right? You know.
Yeah, no, so, you were there. You were there, obviously.
Right. Yeah. So we have this connection with this character, and I still believe that the connection is ongoing. You know, if I listen, if I'm attentive, I know that I'm still in touch with him, and I know that he said something to me recently about it. So he's still around, and I think he's really, in a sense, the word I would use here is that he's sanctioning this conversation, and I think he's happy about it because we make another outreach into the world to say what's so about reality beyond the physical 3D existence that we think we live.
Exactly, exactly. And he does communicate with so many people these days, and I've heard from so many and over the years since the book came out, and he's obviously reaching these people and impacting them amazingly, powerfully, but it's still quite a small percentage, and I think it's getting to be time where he reaches a broader spectrum of people in this way. And I think that's happening right now.
And you're helping us right now to do that. So,
well, so are you, my dear.
Well,
so are you.
That's
helping more than I am right now.
Well, so. I wouldn't have been here in the first place if it wasn't for you, so... Believe me.
Mutual Admiration Society. I think you're helping to bring something out that's very important, so thank you for that.
And thank you for acknowledging it.
You're welcome.
Okay, so earlier I had said I wanted to do three parts here. And the first part I was going to ask you about your connections with John and then say something about my connections. But here I'd like you to, if you can recall some of the specific things that John taught you.
Okay. Now, let's see. I need some kind of landmark here. Can you give me a landmark for what you kind of like me to talk about?
Well, for instance, he is fully encouraging you to become further you, to become larger, to expand who you are.
Right.
And let's see if I could find something specifically here. He talks about, here's the thing. He talks about his lifetime as Robert Browning with Elizabeth Barrett Browning.
Right.
And in that conversation, he talks about the partner soul.
Yeah.
Right? And how that works. So maybe, can you recall anything about the partner soul? And by the way, I found in my research a picture of Browning and a picture of Lenin and put them side by side, and we find that they do look alike.
Strikingly alike.
And we're going to try and fit that side by side picture on one of the interview pages so people can actually see the similarity in their look. But, you know, John introduces you to Julia, and there's a whole chapter in the book dedicated to Julia, or entitled Julia, which I sort of called the spiritual metaphysical metaphysics 101, because it contains some very basic ideas about who we are and what's so. And the idea of everybody going to schools, that we are all in schools, and that we are all constantly learning, and by learning we are growing as creators. So those kind of things. I mean, anything at all that you can remember out of specifics of what he told
you? Well, the funny thing is I haven't read my book for quite a long time, but there are so many. I just like to back up to the Browning thing. I discovered the connection first by the album that came out that John and Yoko put out where they mentioned the Brownings. And then I did my own research on it and my own reading, so to speak, energy reading. And I looked up the photographs and got the also reading the poetry of Robert Browning, which is strikingly similar in energetically to spiritually and energetically to John's energy. And so it didn't come to me independently. I just want to make that clear, because a lot of these things we get that are very practical, and we get information, but as we check them out ourselves, we discover we have to know for ourselves and not just say, oh, isn't that a cool idea, but we have to experience that. And that did happen when I looked at the photographs. And also, even though Yoko is Japanese in this life, that even the striking resemblance to Elizabeth Barrett Browning, just energetically, so it's really kind of fun to look at those photographs of people can find them. Now, I'm not sure exactly which part of the soul connection, the soulmate connection you would like me to discuss, but just like give me an example of what you would like me to talk about, because it has been a really long time since I wrote about that, since that chapter. I think, oh my God, what did I write in that chapter?
Listen, go back and read your book.
I think it's time. I was reading a little bit, preparing for the interview. It's time I went back and read my own book. But that you are so right. But meanwhile, I will remember it all. If you touch upon one particular subject that you want me to comment on, I can.
As I close out part one of this interview, for our listeners, I would like to remind you that this is appearing on the Harmonic Concordance blog during the week of October 6th, 2014. That is done deliberately to coincide with John Lennon's birth week. He was actually born on October 9th of 1940. So please do look for part two of our conversation about spirit through the eyes of John Lennon during the week of October 13th, and part three during the week of October 20th. But for now, if I may, I would just leave you with my own reminder here that we are all on the mission to light, that love is the engine, peace is our guide, and joy is our song. Namaste.